Brett Bunch, the show ESPN 630, presented by Flight by Yuengling, raised the bar with the next generation of light beer. Jerry Jones went on his weekly radio show hit in Dallas, 105.3 The Fan, was asked about Dak Prescott and what's been going on since he came back from a calf injury.
Oh, well, you know, Bram, I'm giving him all that money.
Yeah, he
needs to make it worth it.
Let's see. He said, I don't want to say he doesn't want to say, what does he not want to say? I don't know.
You're not.
He called it a slump, is what he called
it. Okay.
He said, it's such a multifaceted evaluation that I would say our offense is definitely away from where we were playing 5-6 games ago from the standpoint of production. They asked Mike McCarthy whether quarterbacks can get in slumps. And he said, I wouldn't say a quarterback is having a slump. It's different in football. A lot of things go into it. I don't think Dak is in a slump. I think everything has not gone the way we would like to go with the things that we can focus on and improve on. That's the focus this week. We got a chance to go through the videos as a staff, and the players went through them Monday morning. We'll just keep working. It goes this way sometimes. In his six games since his return, he's thrown 8 TDs and 6 interceptions, 1,568 yards. In his first 6 games before the injury, 16 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, 1,800 yards. Asked if he's healthy, they claim that he is. I would beg to differ on that one after watching him play on Sunday. I don't think so. They said he's a little sore, but he's healthy. Asked, does he trust his body? That's a very good question.
Like that.
Said, Jerry Jones said, I think he's playing smart in a lot of cases relative to how he extends plays, whether he runs the ball or not. All right. So Kellen Moore said, I don't know if I like the description of a slump. That's what he said.
Okay.
All right. I think slump's the wrong word here. I am going to go with this guy does not trust his body right now. Probably for a variety of reasons.
Sure.
One, he had a terrible injury a year ago. He's got a calf injury now. Is it bad? Only he knows really the answer to that. Mm-hmm. He's playing with it. I've seen this a million times. These guys play with things, and then you find out after the fact it was a heck of a lot worse than it ever was. Here's what I saw, having watched him live over the weekend. He is very unsure of himself.
Yep.
Like, and I mean, in terms of when to run and when not to. And that's really it. He did have two really bad interceptions. The first one to Collins, I don't know what he was looking at when he threw that one. And the second one, I think Moore was a good play by Holcomb and Wise than really anything else. And yeah, he made a big mistake there, but I'm going to give them credit for making a really good defensive play. The first one was, I don't even know what he was doing. Mm-hmm. What I noticed multiple times during the game, is he didn't want to run. And when the play broke down in the past, he's one of those quarterbacks that kills you with his legs.
That's right.
Like he's gone. Like he's got a, 15, 20 yard run in him. He's fast. Mm-hmm. And that's not what he was doing. There was one sack on Sunday where he clearly should have run and stopped at the line of scrimmage to try to get rid of the ball, then didn't pull the trigger and got tackled anyway, and it was a sack. There were multiple occasions where I see hesitancy in him, and I think it's because he doesn't want to run and he doesn't want to get hit. So there's two things going on here. I'm going to go with his leg hurts a lot, whether it's the calf or the, the repaired ankle or both, but his leg hurts a lot because he's not running. He's moving around semi-gingerly. He doesn't look nearly as fast as he used to, and he's very hesitant to put himself in harm's way. Like, he likes this design stuff, but even then, when it's there for him to run, he doesn't do it. So I don't think slump's the right word. I think he's either way more hurt than they're letting on, which is the excuse I'll give him, or he's scared now a little bit. And I'm more inclined to believe it's the first one, that he's hurt. He's actually more hurt than he's letting on, that calf, ankle, both, whatever, that's what it is. But I'm pretty convinced they ain't going anywhere if he doesn't somehow heal up before the end of the season, because it didn't look good the other day. I mean, it looked like a guy who was in, like, extremely hesitant in the way that he's playing right now.
I mean, it could be a combination of everything, but don't we always say this too with some athletes and injuries, that sometimes it's not about the injury recovery, it's about the injury then eating into the off season of what their normal routine is.
Yeah.
I think you're probably seeing it here with him, is that he does whatever he does in the off season, whether that's taking a break, whether that's practicing, whether that's, you know, doing whatever he does. It took away from that because he was hurt so late in the season. Maybe that's the case there. What I do know is this offense has got so much money tied up into it, it better kind of turn around literally next season, or else they have a lot of money locked into some dudes. That Cooper contract looks terrible right now. Like, he's getting $22 million a year. Like, thank God we didn't sign him for that much.
When I heard we were going after him for that kind of money,
right,
I was so glad that didn't happen.
Right.
And so glad that didn't happen. Like, I think he's a good player, but I don't think you pay that, especially, he's not even your guy, so you don't even really know him.
Right.
I don't think you pay something like that. Like, I know everyone could parse out, like, did they do the right thing with Curtis Samuel? Because that doesn't look good right now, the way that he's barely played. He's kind of barely on the field. He's been hurt the whole offseason. But they paid him half of that. And hopefully, on the back end of this contract, if he gets healthy, that he'll look like the guy that was in Carolina. Amari Cooper, at times, can be a really, really dominant, game-changing player, but it's not consistent whatsoever. That's a lot of money to pay him. And I remember feeling, like, relief when I heard they were going after him and didn't get him for that price. I thought it was way too much.
And then they have a running back. That
we have a number one here.
Right.
Who's getting paid a fraction of that right now. That's going to change in a couple years.
Yeah,
that's going to change. But for now, it was unnecessary. Plus, like, if you're asking questions about who your quarterback is, I don't care how much you pay your wide receivers.
Right, right.
I'd rather pay the quarterback and let the quarterback go ask Aaron Rodgers about that.
Right.
Or Tom Brady about that, who complain about who their targets are but seem to make all pros out of people overnight. Like, Alan Lazard here is not Alan Lazard there, right. And I think we all know that.
And then, you know, we can mention the Zeke contract. He's getting $6 million. That's not a backbreaker, but you don't pay a running back that much usually. So that's another one that's going to add up there.
He's also hurt. Like, right. That is very obvious.
Right.
Like, he has absolutely no lateral
that's
movement right now.
Annual, by the way.
Yes, like, it is. He hasn't been the
something.
Same. And last year, I don't know what was up last year, but he was fumbling the ball all the time. This year, he looks hurt to me. Like, that's why I kept emphasizing, like, if Pollard doesn't play, this is a big deal. It's a big deal. This guy can't move. Like, he runs straight into the line. No lateral movement. The hole has to be there for him to hit it. Like, he's a good football player, so he knows where to go. But if it's not there, he's not the same guy. He's not breaking the tackles anymore. He doesn't have that quick burst to do a lateral cut like he used to. Like, he was a monster. He's not a monster anymore. If the blocking and the hole isn't there anymore, he just runs straight into the line. There's no lateral movement. And now Dak, that's more concerning to me if I'm a Cowboys fan. He looks really hesitant right now. To me, like, really hesitant. And I have to believe it's injuries. Like, I can't believe it's anything else. I think he's hurt and he's just not saying it. That's all.
He definitely, I think he's the candidate for, he gets a full off season and he'll actually look right next
year.
He looked too good before that injury for that to kind of regress as much as it did.
Yes. So that's that one. On Joe Judge today, there's some big-time backing from a lot of people in New York for him to stick around. One on his team, Saquon Barkley, who said, I plan on being a big reason why we turn this thing around. It's just my mindset. It's my thought process. When I got drafted here, I said, I want to be here the rest of my life. I was born in New York. I'm from Pennsylvania. I live an hour and some change from my parents' house. This is where I started my career. It's where I want to finish my career. I know this thing is going to turn around, and I would love to be a part of all of that. And he went on to talk about his ankle injury from a year ago and how it's kind of bothered him.
That's right.
Asked about Joe Judge, he said this. I think we've bought in. We have the guys that are bought in. We work. We love football. We have guys that are committed to it. But that's everywhere in the NFL. It's why it's hard to win in the NFL. We just have been very unfortunate as a team, as an organization, whether it's injuries or just the way we lose games. But it's part of the building process, and it's going to change at some point. And when it does, it's going to be a beautiful story. So he's supporting him, says he does a good job. More importantly, is the ownership, who are also supporting him big time. Let's see. Out in Los Angeles, which is where Steve Tisch, one of the owners, is, because he's based out in Hollywood. After the loss the other day where the Giants got housed again, he said, I'm not interested. This is what Judge said. I'm not interested in shortcuts. I'm not interested in quick fixes. I want to do this the right way. And when I took the job, I made it very, very clear that I was only going to do this if we were committed to doing it the right way. And that's been something that's been very clear from ownership on down. And I'm very happy with the support that ownership gives. John Mara has consistently said he believes in Joe Judge's vision and continues to. He said he has, quote, poured the foundation. They're heading in the right direction. They're rebuilding the right way. Judge said of the Mara and Tisch family, both families are tremendous people to work for. And I know this team is very, very important to them. It's their family business. It's my family business, too. I take pride in what I do. So the owners are not saying anything publicly. They're not doing any kind of like false, like, yeah, he's got our backing, which is always kiss of death. They're staying in the background,
right.
But they've quietly, under the surface, said, this is still our guy. He isn't going anywhere. So Gettleman may be out, but that means that whoever the GM is who comes in has to work with this guy.
Right.
They think, and I saw someone else, Schefter or someone else say, they've gone so far as to say they think he's their next Bill Parcells. That's what they think of this guy. And they're not going to give up on him yet, and it's only been 2 years, and dimes may stink for all they know.
Right. If they're wrong, you're going to pinpoint this as the offseason where they really could have had the opportunity to have the full reset. I'm not really, like, sure whether he's the guy or not.
I am not either.
Their roster is a little bit helter-skelter. Like, it never seemed to me like they kind of know what they're doing with the roster, which, of course, goes to Gettleman. So...
Well,
I don't know.
They used a first-round pick on Daniel Jones.
Right.
It has not panned out.
He wasn't there, right? Judge, right? Yeah.
Judge was not there when that happened.
So that's not his
guy. He inherited him.
Yeah,
right. He inherited him. And when I watch him play, too, I have the same feeling when I watch him. He's not a bust. There is some talent there.
Yeah.
There are some things about him that you really like, but it never seems to go his way, and at critical moments, he fails.
He's the anti-Eli.
Yes. You know, there's...
He's got these moments where we're like, wow, looks like a pro quarterback. And the other ones were like, what are you doing?
He's not limited in arm strength. He's actually pretty fast. He's really good at those fake bootlegs. Like, really, really good at that. He's got a big arm. He seems to have the demeanor. Everyone says he has the work ethic. But when push comes to shove, this is a little bit of the Turgeon conversation.
Yeah.
It's like, I kind of like the guy, but it just doesn't happen for him. And at critical moments, especially in the red zone, I don't know, his heart rate go up or something? Because he makes mistakes. So they got to make a choice there. And then, you know, that doesn't look good on the GM if it doesn't work out. That's your quarterback of the future, one. Two, last year they picked an offensive lineman in the top five who's done nothing, has been a bust so far for them. So he may be heading towards, we have to move him to guard or something like that, or... Someone else, remember, they had to fire the offensive line coach where he got in because he was like, make this guy good, and the guy couldn't make him good.
Remember, they got in a physical altercation.
Right. Outside of that, like, their O-line is average. The rest of their talent is, if Barkley becomes himself again, pretty good. I was saying this last year, I'm worried about them. Like, they look like the type of team that could kind of put it all together, but they've got it, not unlike this team, they got to find out who their quarterback is. And they have a different conversation. Our guy's a gamer. He kind of can't do the things that Daniel Jones can do, which is where we're going, all right, I love his gumption, you know, but like at some point you got to be able to do certain things at this level that other people can't do, because you watch a Herbert highlight and you go, oh, well, isn't life easier when you have a guy who does things like that?
That's right.
Jones can actually do those things. They just don't happen very often, and they don't happen in critical moments. So they got to make a decision about him. Gettleman, I assume, is gone either way because the fans want some bloodletting to happen here. I mean, that's got
to
happen.
Well, not to mention, you just mentioned two top five picks.
They got two top 10 picks. Are they going to let him make them?
Right. Right. No, I don't think so.
Especially if you are going to pick a quarterback with one of them. That's right. You going to let him make the decision of who that quarterback is?
I would hope not. I mean,
this is the Bears. This is the Bears thing. How do you let the GM who screwed up the first time picking a quarterback pick the next quarterback? How do you let him do that?
That's right.
So I think he's going to be gone, but that reads to me like, I believe it. They're going to keep him. Joe Judge is going to be the coach next year. Unless something happens here down the stretch that is weird. If he's getting the support of the players and the owners are quietly saying, we do think we have Bill Parcells here, then they're going to have to find a GM who's willing to work with this guy.
Yes, correct.
And so he's actually going to have a say in who the GM is.
And I think that's why they're saying this now, because they're laying that base of like, if you don't want to work with this guy, don't bother applying.
Don't knock on our door.
Right.
We have a GM opening, but it's going to be for someone who's willing to work with this guy, who believes in this guy's program. And you're going to have to find players that fit into this guy's program, whatever that is.
And
they do feel very helter-skelter. I agree with you. They feel very helter-skelter to me when I watch them. I don't know exactly what they're building. Maybe they thought, that offense should be based around Barkley. Then he got hurt. So then all of a sudden they're like, crap, what do we do here? So they went and spent a bunch of money and drafted a receiver, spent a bunch of money on receivers. So now they're a pass offense with Jones, who's not a prolific passing quarterback. I think you guys are kind of mixed up about who you're trying to be at this point.
I wonder, too, he must be making improvements at practice / listening to the players. Because remember in training camp, that was like weird. Remember he was having them
they had a big fight.
Yeah, they were running.
Then he made them run. Then they got into a whole thing.
They signed a lineman who retired 2 days later.
Yeah.
And
then they cut somebody in the middle of practice and made an example of them.
Yes.
And the guy was like, that's BS. You don't have to embarrass me.
That's right.
There's cameras rolling. You're watching you cut me?
Yeah.
Come on, man. And he was right. That's not right. You don't do something. That was Kelvin Benjamin. They cut him.
That's right.
While they were practicing, they walked out on the field and cut him while the cameras were rolling, and it got picked up and people watched them cut him.
Right.
That was wrong. He didn't do anything wrong. That was wrong.
So my guess there is he must have been listening to the players. And I'm not saying he probably bent to them, but he probably hears that and probably eased up on them a little bit. That's what it tells me there. I actually don't think it's the worst move in the world, because I also am looking at who do they hire, and you tell me who should knock Joe Judge out of his job.
I don't know.
I don't think it really the guy exists right now.
I believe in everything I'm reading today, he's going to be the coach next year.
Yeah.
They're going to have a new GM, and I would think a new quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I would think. And they're going to have a new offensive coordinator. That's going to happen. I would think if Saquon Barkley is looking like he's going to be healthy again, that they go back to, we don't need to have some prolific passing quarterback. We need to base this around him because he's our freak.
Right.
That's what it should be.
Jones, by the way, one more year left on his rookie deal. They can pick up another year if they want to, only making $8 million. So if they really want to, they could...
He's in his fourth year. Is that what it is?
Third year this year. So it'll be
so he's got his fourth year. And they have to decide, like Mayfield, they have to decide if they're going to pick up the fifth year option.
That's right.
Which at this juncture, I don't think that they would. And they may play it out. But they have him under control for 2 years.
Right.
But they're not making a choice on the fifth year option now.
Right. Saquon in year four.
That's going to be an interesting one. I think that's going to come down to what are their options.
I think they probably pick that up and he's got some value no matter what. Because the price they're going to get him at, somebody will take a stab at him.
Trade for him?
Pick. Yeah.
What,
I think
trade a third round pick or something
like that?
Take a shot?
I think you'd be dumb not to if you're a team that really needs one or thinks that you can compete with him.
I don't want him here, by the way. I actually, even if Rivera and them think he's pretty good, I really think the fan base would be turned off by it because they would just, we've seen this too much. We've seen how much he loses. I just don't think he's the guy.
No,
and just perceptually, I just think it's a bad move.
I agree with you, but he's also not a bust, really.
I don't think he is.
He's made enough plays.
There are moments where I'm like, ooh. He's got a big arm, and he's actually pretty fast. And everything I hear about him, he's big work ethic and all that stuff. But, it just ain't happening for him.
The other one is Saquon enters year five next year. So,
well, that's a big one then.
Yeah.
That's a big, because, he's got to prove he's healthy. If he proves he's healthy, they'll have to either franchise him or give him a long-term deal.
That's right.
He doesn't prove he's healthy, I think they need to actually walk from him.
I agree.
And that's just unfortunate. Mm-hmm. He looked like the type of guy who was going to be a Hall of Fame running back a couple of years ago. All right, let's take a quick break. Josh Robbins from The Athletic's going to join us to talk about the Wizards as they continue a skid. Bray Moise, the show, ESPN 630, Sports Capital. All right, welcome back. Ray Watch the Show at ESPN 630, presented by Flight by Yingling. Raise the bar with the next generation of light beer. Pleased to welcome in Josh Robbins, the first time to this show, covers the Wizards for The Athletic. And as of, I don't know, a few weeks ago, he was covering the best team that this area's had since the 1970s. And over the last couple of weeks, is not covering that anymore. Hey, Josh, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. Thanks for asking. Not to worry about me.
What has happened the last couple of weeks? I know that's a broad question, but just in general, what do you think has happened to the Wizards over the last couple of weeks?
Well, that's a broad question, but unfortunately, from their perspective, it's a good one. When I look at this team, I know obviously that the defensive numbers are much worse, and they're having terrible starts to games for the most part. The real issue, it seems to me, or the bigger issue, is the offense, because so many of the problems with the defense, I think, stem from the offense. There's a lot of frustration among the players not hitting shots and that they're not playing well. But it's in some cases and sometimes just that when the other team is able to get the ball on long rebounds or isn't having to take the ball out of the net, the Wizards don't set their defense. So it's all interconnected, and as your question correctly implies, it's a mess. It's a mess right now.
Yeah, it is. Let me start with Bradley Beal, who's averaging 22 points a game, which is far below what he's been accustomed to the last couple of years. I know he's on a very different team. His three-point shooting is at 27% now, which is way below his average. What do you think is going on with him in general?
I do think that they are correct. By they, I mean the Wizards, Wes Unseld Jr. and Brad himself, when they say that he's getting, for the most part, just blitzed. They're sending two men to the ball. They're not giving him much space, and the Wizards have to work extra hard, and sometimes they're not succeeding in terms of screening well enough to get him the space he needs. All that said, again, your question is so correct. It doesn't explain it all. Even when he has open shots, he's not hitting them like Bradley Beal is capable of hitting them and has hit them for years. And to pile on, or at least to add to everything, it has to be noted that his three-point shooting numbers have diminished in recent years. And yet, even so, even with all that, it is stunning to see how badly he's shooting.
Yeah,
there's no way to sugarcoat it, nor should we try. It's just he's shooting very badly.
You know, I wanted to be fair to him early in the season because I know he got hurt late in the preseason, and I know he was playing through it, and he missed a game here or there early. And so I was like, you know what? Because he was short on a lot of shots, and I'm like, you know what? This guy is playing through something. I'm going to give him a break here for a little bit. But at this juncture, I don't see an excuse like that right now. So I'd like to hear from him or from anyone else to explain why his scoring and his shooting percentage are both down the way they are.
I think there are valid reasons that would impinge on his scoring. New coach, new system, a bunch of new teammates, the lack of a marquee running mate. And by that, I don't mean that the other guys aren't good players, but for so much of his career, as you know, he's been playing next to some one individual for the most part. And Westbrook certainly qualifies, and John Wall in his heyday qualifies.
Definitely.
Someone who, just by his very presence, was someone the other team had to terribly worry about or had to devote a lot of concern to. Yes, this team is deeper and has better veterans for the most part, but they don't have that one other person. And right now, Spencer Dinwiddie isn't that person, as projected, who really concerns an opponent. So I think that all plays into it too. And I do wonder, and I'm purely speculating here. I do wonder the degree to which the pressure of this enormous decision, this enormous career decision that is on the doorstep for him is facing, that whether that's any issue here. He hasn't indicated as much, but he wouldn't be human if it weren't affecting him in some degree.
Yeah, but on the other side of that, and I've been raising a flag about this for a while, and I say this with all due respect to him, because like everybody else, I like him, I love him, he's an outstanding player. But if he can't elevate the franchise, or he can't be the P1 player of the team, regardless of who he's running out there with, and I think this is a more diverse group than he's had in at least a few years now, then I don't know how they justify giving him the biggest contract in the NBA. And so I wonder if there's some at all a crack in that foundation of, are we really going to make him the highest paid player in the NBA if he cannot ascend to being one of the best players in the NBA?
That's a fascinating question. And as a former Wizard used to say, a guy I coached when he was covered when he was a coach, Scott Skiles would say, your point is valid. When you, there is some validity there. At the same token, this is the way the business of the NBA does work. Your marquee player, your foundational player, gets paid the maximum amount he can possibly be paid. And the one thing I would push back on is that when you lose such a person, you have no, unless you are the LA Lakers or lately in recent years, the LA Clippers, there's no guarantee you'll get someone of his caliber back.
I agree.
So that's the elephant in the whole, that's one of the many elephants in the room, but it's also the biggest elephant. How does this resolve?
I agree.
I wish I had the answer. So I'd write it faster than you've ever seen someone type if I knew the answer.
Let me go back to Dinwiddie since you brought him up. And I think you were the one that was kind of tweeting about that they want him to be less of a facilitator and be more aggressive. Is that where they think the answer would come from? That he could alleviate some of this scoring need off of Beal if he were to bring it like that?
It certainly would help. And it would lessen the pressure, the in-game pressure on Beal and on everybody else. Because this is not the Spencer Dinwiddie this is not who he is and what he's capable of. I'm not suggesting he's an all-star. But he was pretty darn capable in the first 13 games. And it is correct that they are not gelling, he and Beal. But it also, and as I wrote today, there does seem to be some sort of disconnect between what Wes Unseld Jr. wants from Spencer Dinwiddie, which is all what he should be wanting, and what Spencer Dinwiddie thinks he's being asked to do. And I guess I'm just leaving it out there because I can't quite explain it, even though I've asked about it and wrote about it. And it could be just as simple as them sitting down yet again, because they must have dialogue all the time, as 1 through 15 and the head coach do. But that's got to get solved, too. It's one of the many things that this team's got to solve right now.
I mean, and that's odd, too, because they courted Dinwiddie. This is the guy they went after. He knew who the coach was going to be. And how they're not on the same page this soon after the start that they had is confusing to me, honestly. And I'm sure it is to you, too.
Well, it is, which is why I asked about it, and Ava Wallace of the Washington Post asked about it. Yes, last night. So it is odd. And it's also increasingly odd because he played well to start the season. I'm sure you can't see this. I'm shrugging my shoulders as you and I are talking.
Yeah.
I want to say it's peculiar, and yet I'm not sure that's the word to use. At the bare minimum, the one thing I guess that people who follow the Wizards can take some solace in is that the way Spencer Dinwiddie is playing is almost an overabundance of unselfishness.
Huh.
He's not being selfish enough. That's got to get settled.
Yeah.
That's got to get resolved because they need who he can be, and he can be that.
I guess, you know, this is really confounding because, all right, so the way they started was ball of fire, and I would be willing to chalk up to new energy, new system, other teams didn't know what their rotations were going to be like, and they've caught up to them. And the fact that, like, things have evened out a little bit shouldn't be a surprise, but it's the thud of it. Like, it's not that they're losing some games to good teams like Denver and Utah. It's that they're getting run, and they don't seem to have an answer for it. And that's where the course correction is so dramatic that I just kind of don't get what happened here.
Your point is valid, and it's not funny, but it is such a stark turn. I think you and I, well, I don't know what you think, but I will presume that you are like me, that you didn't think that they were 10-3 the rest of the season as well, good. And I only say that because that is such rarefied air.
Yes, you're correct. I did not think that. I was very happy it was happening, and I was all over chanting MVP at Montrezl Harrell, but I knew it wasn't going to last. I just didn't think it would turn like this. I thought, like, wow, we have a more diverse, professional, deep team that maybe could compete at a little higher of a level than maybe I expected, but I didn't expect this return to we're getting thumped by people. I just didn't expect that to occur.
Yeah, there's no shame in, let's just say, if they had gone 8-5 or 7-6 the rest. That's a good NBA team. Good NBA teams go 8-6 or 7-6 and 8-5 over those stretches of games. And you're so right. It's not just that teams lose. It's the way that they're losing. They are, as you say, getting run out of the gym at times. And it seems like everybody, or just about everybody, is enduring a slump at this time. You know, that happens too, but typically not to, you know, veteran teams over this period of time. So again, I'm shrugging my shoulders, and it's my job to figure out what's going on. Don't misunderstand me, but I also feel like within the team, there's some confusion too, as to what's going on. Yeah. Yeah, the team, Wes Unseld Jr. used the phrase, you know, and I'm quoting him here, we got to get our mojo back. Those are his words. He's so right. It's not just that simple, and nor is he suggesting it is, but it does seem like a team, and it clearly is a team that has lost that mojo, and they got to find it fast, or they're going to get snowed under by the whole conference.
Yeah.
They're not careful.
I mean, so do you think the answer for them defensively is just to be more efficient offensively, or do you see trouble on that end of the court like we've had for years and years and years in the past?
The problems on offense, if improved to just a respectable fraction, that will go a good way to helping the defense. But there have been some cracks in the defense where there has been confusion. They've struggled, as many teams do at times, to defend the middle pick and roll. Daniel Gafford's foul trouble really hurts this team, and he had more of it last night, one of which was a ridiculous foul call, I thought. They got to get better there too. And they got a lot of work to do, and it's not helped by the fact that they haven't been able to practice much.
Yeah.
But I got some unwelcome news. Other teams aren't able to practice much either due to their schedules.
Yeah. All right, I'll let you go on this. I'm just curious what you're hearing around the league. Obviously, the Bulls had to have a couple of games postponed because of an outbreak. The Nets have an outbreak. The Lakers have closed down their facility. Just what's the general, what's going on in the NBA? I'm following the NFL closely. What are you hearing in the NBA right now with COVID concerns?
There is worry. But it's also mitigated by the fact that, and thank God for this, that, and not just in the NBA, but in society at large, people who are fully vaccinated and or are boosted are seem to be well, very, very well protected from severe illness. So the worries are less of an existential worry than they are about, I wouldn't say nuisance problems, because this is a serious problem, but it's not like there's the amount of franticness where we didn't understand where we as a species could protect ourselves from a pandemic. You know, at least we are, and the NBA is part of everything, that at least we have some answers on how we can avoid severe illness.
But you're not hearing anything right now that there's a concern they'd have to shut the league down for a short, even if it's for a short period of time. Because as you know, the rosters are fragile. There's only so many guys on it. If there's an outbreak on a team, like with the Bulls, they had to postpone games. There's no momentum towards a potential shutdown coming anytime soon?
Not that I'm aware of. Okay. Not that I've heard. Certainly I have not heard that, and I haven't even heard whispers of that.
Okay.
Doesn't mean they're not existing, but I haven't heard those, no.
Okay. Josh, pleasure having you on. Thanks for coming on today. I appreciate it.
Pleasure was mine, actually. Thank you.
Thanks. All right, it's Josh Robbins. You can follow his work on The Athletic on the Wizards, who are falling apart. All right. One quick thing he said I want to get your reaction to. The weight of the decision on Beal potentially bothering him as to why his numbers are down, to which I counter with, I do wonder if the organization is looking at this a little bit differently now that it is, at least for this stretch, obvious he cannot ascend to that level of a player.
What I don't understand, if it's weighing in on it's on him so much, like, this has always been the case. So
it has.
Like, why in this year is it affecting him?
Okay.
I'm not sure.
How about this as a theory then? The last couple of years, Wall hurt and out. And last year, Wall not here, Westbrook here. I think he knew that the bar was low.
Yeah.
And that if he put up crazy all-star numbers, well, that would just validate everything we've said and believe about him.
Sure.
But the results don't matter. No one expects them to win. Them coming out of the gate, the way they came out this year with a deeper team, right? All of a sudden, there's a, oh, you guys could be, I don't know, a 4 seed, a 5 seed. Maybe you could challenge Miami for that division. And it is just totally imploded over the, it doesn't mean it can't change.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's totally imploded over the last couple of weeks in a way where, like Josh said, they lose a game here that, all right, it's an NBA season and they're not that good. They're not a 60-win team, you know, but like the way they're losing, they're getting crushed. Don't be fooled by that score last night. They were not in that game at all. They were not in that Jazz game. The Raptors killed them the other day.
Jazz game, they were up at half. They were in that
the
game.
The second half was an abomination.
Yeah, no, they let it slip in the worst way. Yeah.
The last night, if it wasn't for a crazy frantic fourth quarter, which never even got them close to winning, the score would have been embarrassing last night. They were getting crushed.
So for last night's game, I have a theory here. The Nuggets have this dude, Campazzo, who is like a pest. He's crazy on defense. He makes these crazy passes. He's a pest. Like, best example I can give for who the Nuggets have here. The Nuggets were up by 33 points in the third quarter. And this guy's on the court, and he's in Beal's face. And Beal finally is like, dude, what are you doing? And he shoots two three-pointers right in his face, and he swishes them both. And Beal's starting to get fired up. And the rest of the Wizards are starting to get fired up. And all of a sudden, they are starting to roll, and then Jokic gets elbowed by Dinwiddie, you know, off of a drive to the basket. He's pissed. The refs are eyeing him. He gets two texts real quick, and he gets ejected. And all of a sudden, the stakes are high because they decided to have an attitude about the game real quick that they didn't come out with. I have a theory now that the book in the NBA on them is just go out and let them shoot. Let them shoot three-pointers. Leave guys wide open.
I was yelling this early because their three-point percentage was so low, and I was like, that's not good. They're not going to keep winning. I was like, they're shooting 29, 30% from three. They're going to start losing games like that.
They're going to let guys shoot the ball. And it hurts, by the way, that they don't have Kuzma. I'll say that. The last two games, not having Kuzma has killed them.
Agreed.
But I think the book is out on them. Let them shoot the three-pointers, take your possession, make a simple play, and all of a sudden the score is going to be indicative in your favor by 10, 20, maybe even 30 points. Also, just be careful not to piss them off, because if you just do that to them, they're going to lay down and let you have it, and I feel like that's what the book is on them. Because
I mean, whatever it is, I got to tell you, like, it's turned fast.
Because their defense has slipped. It's not terrible, but I don't know.
I'm with Josh on they keep jacking up these threes, and they're hitting at such a low clip.
It's their teams.
I'm with them on that.
Teams are letting them shoot, and they're taking the percentage. They're saying, you know what, if they have a hot night against us, we'll adjust, but we're going to let you shoot at the beginning, because you know what happens too?
Basketball, people don't talk about it this way. Basketball is an analytics game. It really is.
Yes.
As much as baseball is. Like, the analytics have gotten to the point where teams know where guys should be shooting from, let alone shooting.
That's right.
Where they should be shooting from, how often, what volume they should be shooting at. And the Wizards do look like a team that just got put together, and they're jacking stuff up. And on the nights that it falls, they're actually very tough to beat. They got a professional team.
They're world beaters.
And right now, when it's not falling, though, boy, do they get behind fast.
They get destroyed. And they can't shoot it fast enough. And here's the other thing, too, that I think the other teams know.
And they're not playing so up-tempo that they're buying possessions.
Right. And
like if you're going to shoot that kind of percentage from three, you better play fast. Like that Westfall ball. You're just going to go up and down. We'll take the misses, but we're going to kill you with just accumulation of shots. And they'll start falling, and then you're going to get tired, and then you're not going to catch up to us, and we're going to outscore you. Well, they don't play that way either.
Well, and it's twofold here, and I know we got to take a break, but it's twofold because they're going to let them take those shots, and then if they keep missing them, they get discouraged, and they can't do it anyways. And all of a sudden, they don't know what to do anymore, because by that point, it's too late to start going through Gafford and Harrell. Or they get in foul trouble, which has also happened here.
And they're a better
games.
Defensive team, but they're not a lockdown defensive team. Right. So they're not buying back a bunch of possessions and then getting down the court and getting easy buckets. They're not.
Yep.
So they can't play from behind.
Yep.
Not big behind, you know.
No, if it's not falling for them, which most nights it's not these days.
They get crushed. And they got no recourse for it.
Where I think the biggest problem is, though, because I can handle 10-point losses to the Nuggets. You're supposed to lose to the Nuggets by 10 at their place.
So what do you...
by 33?
Should Wu be slowing it down? They got to play like the Knicks? Is that what you're saying? We got to slow this down. We got to shorten the game a little bit, and we got to take better shots, run the shot clock down.
Until they figure it out.
Until they figure it out.
Figure out who they've got to feed. Now,
truth is, they have two big men, so they should be pretty good on defense. Kuzma's not a bad defender.
That's right.
Caldwell Pope's not a bad defender. Beal says he wants to be a good defender. Dinwiddie's not awful, so they're not the parked car defense team. But when they play loose and up-tempo and they're not shooting well, they can't get their defense set, and then they get run off the court. So what? They got to play Thibodeau ball now? They got to slow it down?
I wouldn't even say that. They got to make better decisions, and it starts with Dinwiddie.
Play games in the 90s, low hundreds? How they're going
to
win?
I think decision-making's got a lot to do with it as well. Dinwiddie is getting 8, 9, 10, 11 points a night. He's constantly deferring. I know that's what you do as a point guard, but he's not attacking ever when he's got the open look either. He had a pass last night where he passed it from 6 feet out, and it was like, dude, you had a look.
Right. What are you doing?
Take the shot. Right. You know? And it's like, you know, to compare it to hockey real quick, the Caps do that too, where they defer one too many times and they don't get a goal on a wide open net because they decide they want to pass
it. On power play when everyone's screaming, shoot, at the guy. It's not like the pass you're supposed to shoot. Right.
And so I think Dinwiddie's got a little bit of that where he needs to start taking advantage of his looks.
Yeah.
You're left one-on-one with the third or fourth best defender on the floor. Dude, take your shot. They're paying you. They traded for you. Do it. And the other thing here too, and they did this last night, they did it better in the second half, where they don't seem to go through the hot hand sometimes. Like, Bertans started to heat up, and then it took him two or three or four possessions to get back to him, whereas Bertans, you know, you start feeding him, he starts sinking shots.
Let me see. Three-point shooting percentage. Wizards at 34.1. That's pretty terrible. All right. Let me take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Brave Voice to Show ESPN 630 Sports Capital. All right, welcome back. Now I'm wondering, why did Virginia Tech not go hard and heavy on Shane Beamer and get him out of there? Because that guy, in year two, got the former Oklahoma top-rated quarterback, to transfer from Oklahoma to South Carolina and brought some 6'6 tight end with him. Spencer Rattler is going to South Carolina.
Yep.
Off of, obviously, Lincoln Riley left. He may have done that anyway because he got benched in the middle of the season. He may have done that anyway, but Lincoln Riley left. Brent Venables comes in. Spencer Rattler transfers to South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hello there. That's a little wake-up call for the old SEC. The SEC, yes, they did have the Heisman Trophy winner this year.
Yeah.
That's typically not quarterback conference, actually.
They've gotten the Heisman winner quite a bit, though.
Yeah, they have. They have.
They usually have the Heisman winner, actually.
Let's see. Johnny Football.
Mm-hmm.
Tebow, hon.
Was it Baker? Was it Baker?
Baker, hon. That's right. Yeah. Well, he's not SEC. Well, he was Big 12.
That's right. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Big 12. Yeah, you're right.
Often in the past, too, is all those Pac-12 guys.
That's right. You're correct.
Mariota, Carson Palmer, all those dudes. Shiny. but this is, I didn't expect to see South Carolina, the name on the list that gets him. So, wow. Good on Beamer's kid. Wow.
This is kind of what I was telling you. I think they did at least put the feelers out there.
Probably.
They really like him down there. And I'm going to guess he probably just said, you know what? I think I'm building something down here. It's early in my tenure. I'm young. This isn't the right time for me to go there. And this tells you exactly why. People believe in that dude. Good for him.
Yeah.
I told you this. I think he wanted, if the timing was better, he'd go to Tech. Absolutely. But I think he knows he's young enough. And
one year in.
And it's an SEC job. And people love him there
still
already.
Still on a honeymoon.
People love him
there.
They
had no expectations on him last year.
Right. And
now he comes and he gets this. That's a message to everybody else. Florida just shook it up again.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Right?
Right. So, good for him.
Kiffin's always threatening to leave. Leach won't be there long term. You know that.
Yeah.
You're dealing with Saban. That's right. What you're dealing
of
with.
Of course.
You're dealing with Saban, and then, you know, one of these days, maybe Tennessee gets good again. Georgia's right. Really good. Georgia's right. Really good. You got to deal with them.
Of course. But still.
That's a heck of a pickup, though, for him.
I'm telling you, it's because he likes it down there. It's a good fit. It's a really good fit. And he's, like I said, he's young enough where he knows Virginia Tech job becomes available again, which it will in his lifetime.
Yeah.
He could always go back there too.
Not unless so. Gamecocks are number one there, hon.
That's also true.
Possibility.
Very true.
The other one is the UVA quarterback isn't going anywhere. He's not leaving.
Which is why what I kind of said with the Clemson guy going there, why would you?
I bet he wanted an assurance before he took that job that is this guy going anywhere?
I agree. They probably had a conversation. Yes.
He's like, I'm the offensive coordinator at Clemson. I get offered jobs all the time. You know, I could come here, but I need to know I got a shot. And he gets his best foot forward if this guy sticks around with him.
That's right.
So, wow. Wow, wow, wow. What a week. All right. I want to play this clip from the NFL Network guys on Trevor Lawrence and Urban Meyer. We'll do that next. Bray, what's the show? ESPN 630 Sports Capital.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.